When you look at GDP, GDP has been growing at a very fast pace in Venezuela, but it was decelerating before oil prices came down. And this is one of the things I want to emphasize here. The Venezuelan economy was decelerating. There was no way we could keep on growing because of a simple reason. We don't have investment. We don't have any investment in fixed capacity. The last time the central bank published the private investment figure, which was 2004, the figure was a historic low of 5.48% of GDP. That's private investment. And total investment, 8.5% of GDP. So that was up to 2004. In 2004, the government introduced a change in the methodology of estimating investment and started to incorporate imports of durable goods as investments, meaning by that cars, refrigerators, TV, DVDs, etc. And as a consequence of that, the reported investment on the government jumped 10% of GDP. So when we have the Economist Intelligence Unit and other agencies looking at Venezuela, they say, well, this is a very healthy economy. You know, they are investing 32% of GDP, which is the highest in history if you take out the year 1978. Well, yes, but this is not the same investment as it used to be. And that's the way the country is, by the way. It's not the same as it used to be. But this is not the same investment. There was a methodological change that is very important. The year base would change. And the good thing is that when they did the change, they did some years backward. And that allowed us to compare the new figure of investment as a percentage of GDP with the old figure. And it's coming out at 10, 12 percentage points higher than what it used to be. So this is the new investment. We don't have a breakdown between private investment and public investment, and we don't have any idea of that, how much is durable goods. But this is the investment we're looking at in Venezuela right now. Just bear in mind, this is not the same investment it used to be. When you look at depreciation of capital, the average depreciation before 2004, when it was published, was 7.5% of GDP. That means that already by 2004, Venezuela was investing in fixed capital less than the depreciation. So Venezuela, it's a country that is losing productive capacity every year as we speak. So with that in mind, there's no way we could keep on growing at the rates we were growing. That was based on idle capacity and huge public expenditure. So if oil prices wouldn't have come down, what will happen will have been we will have lower growth and a huge inflation, and of course, there will have been more room of maneuver to bring cheap imports to increase consumption without increasing productions, which is what the government loves. So my first message here is the episode of growth of the Venezuelan economy was based on idle capacity. I have worked some figures on average age of the Venezuelan capital. And the average age of the Venezuelan installed capital before the change in methodology was 10 years. When you look at Chile, it's 6.8 years. So you can say that the Venezuelan industrial capacity installed is like 50% older than Chile and 25-30% older than the rest of Latin America. So what that means, well, if we start invested double than Chile this year, in 16 years, we may have the same age of capital than Chile in 2025. That's what it means. And as you know, and I'm going to spend a few time here, a small time here, Venezuela is the worst outlook for investing in any economy in Latin America. What I have here is the ease of doing business. Venezuela is 172 among 178 countries. And what I have here is political stability index of the World Bank. So when you combine those, the best profile for investing, of course, is Chile, and then you have countries receiving a lot of FDI before the crisis. Colombia, Mexico, Panama, Costa Rica. These are the companies where the multinational companies previously established in Venezuela are going now. And then you have Venezuela down here. The only places where it's harder to do business than in Venezuela in the whole world are the two Congos, the democratic and the other one, which turns out to be the more democratic. Guinea-Bissau, Central Africa, and Sao Tome, Chad, and Burundi. Those are, I mean, it's a lot easier to do business, according to the World Bank latest ranking, in Afghanistan, Zimbabwe, Haiti, and Pakistan, and Iraq, than what it is in Venezuela. So my first set of ideas, the Venezuelan experience, was based on a combination of idle capacity after the national strike of 2002 and oil-fueled public expenditure. With net investment in fixed capital close to zero, increases in public expenditure every time had more effect on inflation and less effect on growth. and hard oil prices remain high, we will have had a lot of inflation, lower growth, but we will have a chance to import a lot of things to increase consumption without increasing production. So this is the first thing I wanted to refer to. The second thing is the balance of payment. When you look at consumption, if GDP increases in 5 years, 64%, consumption increase 84%. So it's 20 percentage points of GDP higher. And that was eased by a large, massive inflow of cheap imports that grew at a rate of 44% each year from 2003 to 2007. When you look at 2008, the government ran out of money to keep on increasing imports. What happened? The rate of growth of production aligned immediately with the rate of growth in consumption. Immediately. So before that, you have GDP growing at 8% per year, consumption growing 18% per year. When you curb down imports, immediately the consumption rate of growth has to align with the production rate of growth. So last year, GDP grew 4.9%, consumption grew 6%. So there we go. And this year, what we will have is that the rate of growth in consumption will have to be aligned with the rate of growth in production. This has been achieved by a policy of massively overvaluing the Venezuelan currency. By now, we have already 4 years without the devaluation of the official rate. Of course, we have a not-so-official rate that it's running 200% higher, but a lot of imports up to last year entered the country at the official rate. So this is a system that makes absolutely impossible for Venezuela to have exports out of the oil sector. 95% of our exports belong to oil, and the rest belong to mining. But there's no chance. So usually when you have the devaluation, there is a good thing. The people producing exportable goods will be able to export them at a cheaper price. And having the rate over value has also a good thing. You can import cheap. Well, the government created a system whereby you get the worst of all the worlds. Now we import at 6.77. But when we export, we have to sell those dollars to the central bank at a rate of 2.15 bolivares per dollar. So you get a system whereby you manage to get the worst of the whole world. So you don't have good cheap exports, you don't have cheap imports. And now oil prices came down. So the chart that I showed you when I started my presentation, I have done a pro forma 2009 using a $45 per barrel on average, which is more or less what we think will be. And you will see that the oil exports of Venezuela fall 53%. By the way, the first quarter was released 2 days ago, and exports, oil exports came down 55%. So this is more or less what it's happening right now. So the country is now with a huge amount of imports that have to be curbed down at a time when our dependence of imports is one of the highest since the figure has been published. One of the questions many people ask is, how much of the Venezuelan consumption is imports? Well, the central bank still has a figure for that, 40%. So we are now to curb down imports at a time when our dependence of imports is the largest in the previous 15 years. You can see here the daily allotment of dollars of the official rate. We were running in the midst of a socialist government at levels of $200 million per day in 2008. This was the dollars the government was selling to the private sector for imports or for saving abroad. At a rate, some months the figure reached $250 million per day. This is average per day. So when oil prices came down, this number that has been increasing from 50 in 2005 to 200 in the third quarter of 2008 have to be cut down sharply, and now it's been falling in a free fall, and it's now at $80 million per day on average. So it has been adjusted down by 70% more or less. So what this means, you will not get cheap dollars for imports anymore. We, the government, will focus those cheap dollars in food and medicines, and if you want to import anything else, you go to the parallel market. What's the rate in the parallel market? 200% higher. So up to the first quarter, the results that have been published to me are kind of confusing because you do have that reduction in official dollars. You have all these imports moving to the parallel market. According to the government, imports in the first quarter grew at a 6% rate, but you don't have inflation yet. So at some point, a huge inflation has to appear because you are switching a lot of people from 2 to 7. You might say they were already pricing at 7, so you won't have such a high inflation right now. And that's true, but some effect will have to appear. So far, that effect hasn't appeared. I don't know if it's maybe because the imports done in this quarter are done with dollars mostly liquidated in November, December. But the fact is, in March, liquidations of dollars at the official rate fell 70%. So in June, imports are going to be a lot more expensive. So this is what we did with our dollars last year. We have huge inflow of oil dollars, $93 billion. But the thing is that with these dollars, the government wants to do a lot of things. You want to import $50 billion a year. You want to give to the private sector 22, which is the way that traditionally in academics the private outflow of capital is estimated, private variation of assets plus errors and omissions. This is $22 billion. What's this? The dollars that the government had to sell to the private sector in order to keep the parallel market stable last year. How much that cost? $22 billion a year. And the government wants to save money abroad. And I'm sure your second speaker here will refer more to this. But the government also wants to save $10 billion a year so that you have money abroad and room of maneuver. So now the thing is going to change, because if we use the government figures, this is, and we keep on, just for academic purposes, the figures of imports, private variation of assets, and balance of services, with the new amount of estimated oil exports based on government volumes, if we keep the party running at the same pace, we will lose $31 billion of international reserves. That's using government figures. If we use the international figures, which is that the government is exporting not 2.8 million barrels per day, but 2.2, and that will be very also a good estimate based on international sources, the picture is like this. Our oil revenues will be $36 billion, so there's no way that we can keep consuming at the same pace as the previous year. So there has to be a huge adjustment in the Venezuelan levels of imports, of consumption, of inflation, and of exchange rate. Of course, it might not come through the official rate, but it's a large adjustment in the exchange rate. So as you can see here, this country we're going to be in 2009, it's a whole different country. Venezuela is not in Kansas anymore. This is a whole different picture. I mean, we didn't care about investment because we could import a lot of consumption goods, so that we increase consumption without increasing production. That's over. If you want to increase consumption, now you need to increase production. How do you increase production? Through productivity of labor, through private investment, and those things the government doesn't like to talk about. So these are the first quarter figures for these projections I'm doing. The balance of payment lost $15 billion in the first quarter. Current account was more or less $4 billion negative, and capital account $11 billion. Of course, then you have the central bank saying, do not worry, because of those $15 billion, $12 billion are money that we transfer to the government accounts abroad. So they are still there. So don't worry. It's just going from one pocket to the other. As if that money was transferred as an international reserve, which is what they are trying to do. The government is passing a law now whereby the central bank will account as international reserves not only the international reserves themselves that the central bank administered, but also the money held by Chavez abroad in different accounts that are not reported anywhere. So I think that the market, from a balance of payments perspective, what should look at is we have been losing $15 billion. Oh, we transfer $12 billion to an account. For sure, we transfer them to be used, not to be parked there. So that money, for me, is gone. So we are, at this level, in four quarters like this, we run out of the whole international reserves and the funds abroad. So we will expend the money we say we have and the one we say we don't have. So the key then is two questions. How much money does the government have to face the crisis? And with this, I'm going to finish. And second, what's going to happen to oil prices? Well, to face the crisis, the government has the international reserves, which up to yesterday were $30 billion, which are there. I have friends who work in the administration of of the money, so it's, I believe it's there. And then the government says that they have $28 billion saved abroad in accounts they don't report to anyone and they are not subject to any accountability mechanism. Well, if that is the case, the Venezuelan government will have $57 billion to face the crisis. What's that? Well, it's 14 months of imports and 10 months of imports plus what costs to keep the parallel market running at a stable rate. If that is not the case, if we go for more conservative estimates of how much money does the government has abroad, $8 billion, then we will have 9 months of imports and 6 months of private capital account. But the thing is, in between January and April, the parallel market depreciated 100%. Cadivi adjusted the allotment of dollars by 70%. So that's not the behavior and the policy of a government that has $60 billion in reserves. So that's the behavior of a government that needs to make a quick adjustment because it's running out of money. So if they have the money, I don't understand why they let the parallel market go 100% higher. And I don't understand either why they cut the official allotment of dollars, which will cause a lot of inflation, by 70% in March, which is the latest figure published. So this is the situation. This is becoming what I've done here and what José Manuel will do later. This is becoming more an art than a science because the government passed a law in 2005 that changed the whole flow of money in the public sector. Before, PDVSA will sell all the dollars to the central bank and will get bolívares back, will give bolívares to the government, which will execute the public expenditure. So it was relatively easy. If you don't have the balance of PDVSA, financial statements, with the amount of dollars flowing in the central bank, you will have had a very good idea of how much money is flowing in the country. Now, PDVSA sells to the central bank only the amount of dollars that it needs to pay taxes, and then sends the rest of the money to a fund, and then to Fonden, and PDVSA is executing public expenditure, and Fonden is also executing public expenditure, and then the central government is also executing public expenditure. So when you look at public expenditure figures and balance, etc., you are only looking at this part of the equation. So there's no way to estimate a fiscal gap in Venezuela right now. There's no way. That's what I have chosen to focus on, the balance of payments, because thank God the government of Venezuela has not found a way to print dollars. They can print bolívares to cover the fiscal gap, but they cannot print dollars. So that's why it's better to look at the balance of payments. So on the oil front, which is not my field, forecast for 2009 is 50. What I've done here is just pick the 12 most reputed analysts of the market, the one that has been mistaken the price for the previous 10 years, but they are the ones doing the job. And it says that oil prices will go from 50, which for Venezuela it's 42, to 63, 86, and then 95. So apparently there's a large volatility in these figures, but apparently the price on average will start to increase. I think this pace is too low for what the Venezuelan economy needs. So what has been the policy package so far by the government? They increased VAT from 9 to 12. They increased the tax base for calculating income tax by 19% when inflation is 32, which is equivalent to increasing the income tax rate. The government is doing increasing the minimum wage of 10% in May and 10% in September. This is a huge fall in real wages. 10% in May, 10% in September, average of the year 13%, inflation right now is 30. So this is a typical adjustment of an economy that it's running out of money. It's not the adjustment of an economy with $60 billion of reserves. And the government is selling dollars in the parallel market, very funny. The government is selling dollars at 6.6 bolívares per dollar and not to the central bank, and that is somehow helping to finance the fiscal gap. What is in the making? The luxury tax. And from the balance of payment perspective, there is a sharp reduction in the allotment of dollars, transfer of international reserves to funds abroad without absorbing liquidity. When the central bank transfers dollars to the Chavez funds abroad, they don't get the liquidity back from the market. So they just transfer dollars. So the bolívares keep on just floating there without any backing. On the monetary front, as the government needs to issue debt to finance the fiscal gap, they are implementing an expansionary monetary policy, and this might be suicidal because they are decreasing interest rates and they are decreasing reserve requirement for banks. So you are basically easing liquidity in an environment that from the supply side is very inflationary. So when I look at the policy package as it is, which has never been announced, this has been implemented one thing here, the other there, one public announcement. When you look at the policy package, it makes sense except for this part. And my last slide, there is a relationship between oil prices per capita and poverty. I will tell you that Chavez government has reduced poverty a lot as a consequence of rising oil income. You can see there that when the Misiones was launched, poverty was at 60%. 1 year later, poverty was at 58%. When oil prices started to go up, poverty, as it is income measured, started to go down. And this is the latest figure from the Universidad Católica, 31%, and from INE, 28%, which looks very much alike. The thing is, as we go from this level of oil income to this level, what will happen with poverty? So if the government really had the Misiones running well, it should keep on low. If it was only a matter of distributing oil income, we may have a huge increase in poverty because it's income measured. It's not structurally measured. So if you run out of income, then poverty starts again. So this is what's going to happen. How the government will behave in front of this, how they will curb down all the social discontent that will happen in Venezuela, well, I have no idea. Thank God that doesn't belong to the economic field. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Roberto Sifón.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the invitation, Peter. It's a pleasure for me to be here and also for Standard & Poor's to be able to share our view that it might be a little bit more upbeat than the one that we just heard. A lot of it is because we look at this from a different angle, but nevertheless, we do have a few things to share. And I think that it will be interesting to start explaining a little bit of what we do and how we do it so you understand maybe the difference between what we just heard and maybe what I'm going to say. What are the ratings that we do? What are they looking at? Basically, they are looking at the purely and exclusively capacity and willingness to repay a government's debt, and that is our main goal. Okay. It's very common to confuse sovereign ratings with country risk or country investment rating, which I think Venezuela is a poster child to explain the difference between one and the other. And I think, to make it short, if you were asking me, okay, I want to go and open a business in Venezuela, I will give you an answer that will go along the lines of what we just heard. Now, if you're telling me you're going to go and buy a bond that the government of Venezuela is going to issue, then that's where our explanation is going to come, and it might be a little different there. As I said, you know, we're not recommending buying or selling a security. We're just giving an opinion on what do we think that the capacity and willingness of the government is to repay its debt. When we do our analysis, we look at 9 different indicators. I think in the first one, which is political risk, you'll see that in the case of Venezuela, it's probably the one that really clearly drags the rating down where it is, because when you look at most of the indicators, and remember, all our analysis is done in relative terms, and even though a lot of the numbers in Venezuela might be bad, in relative terms with others in their same category, they are not that bad. Actually, many would argue, and not so long ago, that it should have been higher than what it was. The reason was political risk was the one thing, uncertainty on policy and policy implementation was the main thing keeping it down. Just to put things in perspective, the whole our scale of ratings from triple B minus and above is investment grade. That's where Venezuela is right now. In Latin America, below Venezuela, we have quite a few ratings. As you can see, you have Argentina, Ecuador that is in default, Dominican Republic, and so on. Now, what are we looking at currently, and why do we say, and maybe it's better if I show you this first. If you look here, there are 8 indicators that we're looking at right now that I would say these are probably one of the most important indicators that we look in order to come up with our rating. If you look at these indicators, you'll see that Venezuela, in general terms, it doesn't look it actually looks much better than in most cases than the median for double B, right? I think that's very important to understand where we are and why we're looking at it that way. Many of these indicators would argue for a higher rating, and I go back again to the point of political risk and how do we try to assess and measure that thing that is actually quite subjective. So it leads us to do that. Now, when we look at, okay, what are the main issues that we're looking today when we think about, okay, how is this rating going to go in the future? Remember, we have a negative outlook that we put in December, and that started when the government started to think about the new package that was gonna propose, and we understood that most of the measures that Miguel just explained were, a lot of them were politically motivated and constrained by politics. Remember, that was when Chavez decided to double the bet and go after the second round on the referendum. So the country was facing an economic contraction, which is the one that it's facing now, and this would demand adjustment that you were explaining before and that we share fully. What Venezuela has done, not during the Chavez year, but historically, because I think this is what we're trying to understand, and not to see just this period, but try to see the country as a whole. There are a couple of things. If you were to look at Venezuela in 1928, the structure of the economy, it wasn't that much different to what it is now. Most importantly, the structure of the government revenues were coming 50% from oil, just as they're coming now. What did Venezuela do in the past? The adjustment came from the same, mostly from exchange rate depreciation and increase in taxes. Of course, in this particular case, exchange rate depreciation, I think it was understood that it was going to be politically quite complicated, especially because they were already facing 30-something percent inflation and an economy that, as we were hearing before, imports so many basic goods. Any change in the exchange rate is going to have a massive social cost that he wasn't going to be paying at a moment where he wanted to get his referendum passed. So exchange rate was not around, and most likely, in our view, it won't be around in the near future. Most of the adjustment that we're seeing is coming from increased taxes, many of those that were decreased not so long ago, VAT, one of them. So the idea is going back into that direction. And, of course, there is a large amount of discretionary spending, as most of you know, that it's also being reduced. A lot of the spending that is not seen in any of the books, as it's not seen when it's done, is not seen when it's not done. But it's being reduced. And also current expenditures is no secret, which also explains the economic contraction. I don't know if you read the newspaper today in El Universal, they had this article in which they were saying that the government participation in the economy is growing. Of course, if the state is getting 50% of the revenues, of course their investment is going to come down, and of course the result is going to be contraction. So what we will see in the future, I think what we're expecting is, again, that politics will keep on dominating policy. That said, we've seen, as I said, some pragmatism at the time of implementing policies. One of them was the exchange rate. If you think about the exchange rate per se, yes, it will bring more revenues in the short term, but the inflationary cost is such that will eat up all those revenues pretty quickly. So I think what they're doing right now, which is somehow try to reduce current expenditures, it shows that there is a little bit more thinking about it than just not taking the shortcut, which would have been just increase revenues. Of course, there is also a large amount of hope in oil prices that, you know, we were at 30-something not so long ago. We're already at 61 as of yesterday. So I think somehow they must be pretty happy these few days. Regarding what we're expecting on policies, I think all this stuff, nationalizations, one thing I learned pretty quickly is that everything you hear that is not going to happen, don't say it, because most likely it will happen. We heard that Banco Venezuela wasn't going to happen. Well, sure enough, it's about to happen. Many other things that just when you think this is the way, it goes the other way. So I think that has been a great advantage for his government, the fact that most people underestimate what he can do, and he always overshoots. I think an important point, and I think it also makes reference to something that that we heard before, and that's something that we do care a lot, which is the crowding that there is on financing. A lot of the financing on this year on this year's budget is going to be done by local financing. And this is actually pretty interesting, because trying to understand how the country works, because at the same time that you could go to a meeting and sit down with a banker, and half an hour after he finished telling you all these terrible things that are happening, we will ask you, okay, but the government needs to finance $25 billion this year on local paper. Would you buy it? Of course, is the answer. So I think that's an interesting point. But I think what we did hear, and we did see that there will be that there is enough liquidity in the market, and actually we already saw, to cover this year's budgetary needs. The last point that I think it's important, and I think it's quite crucial in what is going on. We also rate PDVSA, and actually they're related one with the other, the government of Venezuela with the government with rating on PDVSA, is what we've seen that it has happened with the business model of PDVSA. Clearly, it's no secret for none of us here. It has suffered tremendously. It has been shifted from an oil company to a company that produces orange juice, diapers, and a couple of other things. Has a supermarket chain, and of course that can't help to operate a business efficiently. And from our point of view, the one reason why we care is because they keep on being the cash cow of the government. So as they go along on these social endeavors, they lose capacity of keep generating cash for the government, and that's very important. Now, the questions that remain, I think, from our outlook, which is negative, is, okay, what is going to happen with 2009? As I said, we're expecting that within the ranges of the rating and within the range of these measures that are being announced, the government could muddle through. 2010 is a bigger question, and I think the answer to that question will come. I don't think it will come from policy. It's going to come from price. They are betting sincerely on the price of oil. What we see is that so far the price of oil is playing in their favor, is moving on the right direction. And if I had to, I'm not an oil expert, but I was checking, our oil forecast for 2010 and 2011. It seems that it will be moving. The trend. It's on the right direction for Chavez's idea. The last point, which I think is an interesting one, is it comes from the political side. It also could be an interesting threat for this, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out. It's all the current situation with several unions that in the past had constituted a large amount of constituencies, especially the ones in PDVSA and Guyana, all right? That's German, like Guyana. And I think this could constitute a significant focus. There, he's already trying to change all the legislation around there, but this could constitute a significant threat to his base of power. Again, you learn to go slow here. I think the last thing that I wanted to say is we were talking with Peter. As I'm originally from Argentina, so it's kind of impossible to go to Venezuela and don't think about Perón. And when I hear that, well, when oil prices come down, he's going to be gone. Perón was in Argentina in the 30s, and his movement is still way alive. And he's been gone since 1974. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, José Manuel Puente.
Okay, good morning. In the last 2 days, I had a terrible cold, and this morning I took a very strong medicine, and to be honest, I'm feeling slow now. I promise that I didn't smoke anything. But that's incredible. Quite strong. But I would like to talk with you about the Venezuelan economy. Particularly, I would like to talk about the current situation and the challenge for the future. And in particular, I want to make a brief inventory of the warning lights on the dashboard. I think the Venezuelan economy presents many warning lights on the dashboard, because they are getting worse with very low prices. Let me show the first slides. A brief of overview of economic history. Well, the Venezuelan economy in the last 60 years has two totally different patterns of performance. The first one, from 1950 to 1979, was an economy growing at 6.26% on average, always growing. But then you have a second pattern, totally different to the first one, from 1979 to 2008. It's a kind of pattern of Montaña Rusa economy, up, down, up, down, up, down, just to give you an idea. From 1979 to 2006, the Venezuelan economy didn't grow 4 consecutive years. That means that grew 1 year down, 1, 2, 3 down, and that was the pattern in the last 30 years, a kind of Montaña Rusa. I think it's good to remember this because at the moment, the Venezuelan economy, I agree with Miguel Ángel, present important imbalances. If the government doesn't find solutions for those imbalances, sooner or later, the economic contraction will be present. And we can repeat that pattern of Montaña Rusa of goes and down, up and down. What was happening in the last 2 years? Well, thanks to the oil, very high oil prices in 2007, the Venezuelan economy grew at a very high rate, 8.4%. Of all the non-tradable sectors, communications, retail, construction, communication, they had a very high rate of growth. But there is the first red light on the dashboard here. The old GDP had a contraction in 2007. All the sectors were growing, and the old GDP was in a contraction. What's the meaning of this? Well, basically, Venezuela is producing less and less oil. Oil is everything in the Venezuelan economy. Oil is 93% of the total export. Oil is 50% of the total fiscal income. Oil is around 80% of the total dollars we have to finance imports. That means that, you know, oil is the heart of the Venezuelan economy. If you have problems in the oil sector, the Venezuelan economy can have problems in the future. If you compare the level of production, the Venezuelan oil production, at the end of 2008, you can see that the production of 2008 is more or less 500,000 barrels less, but we were producing in 2002 or 2003. And the level of production in 2009 is even lower. That means that Venezuela can be producing now 700,000 barrels less than 2 or 3 years ago. During 2008, you can see an important moderation of growth. The economy, the total GDP grew only 4%. You can see a strong moderation in all sectors of the economy, and now you have another red light on the dashboard. The financial system had a contraction of 4.5%. And that's a kind of paradox, because after 19 consecutive quarters of growth, financial institutions suffer a contraction of 4.5%. It was a sector that was growing during 19 quarters, a very high rate, and then suddenly go down after a fantastic performance during 19 quarters. Here are the last data we have from the Venezuelan Central Bank, the first quarter of 2009. Here you can see a very strong moderation of all sectors. The Venezuelan economy only grew 0.3%. And basically, you have a huge contraction of the oil GDP, 4.8, minery, and many other sectors. And in general, you have moderations in all the sectors in the economy. Basically, what you can see is that domestic economic activity seems to remain on the slowdown that began in 2008, consequence of the moderation of the oil prices. The second red light on the dashboard, inflation. In my opinion, the most important problem in the Venezuelan economy. Venezuela is having the highest inflation in Latin America. In the last 12 months, the inflation was 29%. If you compare the inflation of many other countries in the continent, you can see that this inflation is 4, 5, 6 times higher than other countries like Peru. Peru is having an inflation of 4.7% in the last 12 months. Colombia is around 5%. Chile, around 5%. Mexico, around 6%. That means that Venezuela has the highest inflation on the continent and between the 3 or 4 highest inflations in the world. That inflation is concentrated in many items that are really important for the consumption patterns of the people, food, agricultural goods. And this high and persistent inflation on food and agricultural goods is having a very negative impact over the population, particularly over the poorest. If you see the data of the inflation by socioeconomic groups, where the stratum 1 is at 25% with the lowest income, and the stratum 4 is at 25% with the highest income, you can see that systematically the inflation of the poorest are much higher than the inflation of the richest. And obviously, when you have high and persistent inflation, 30% per year, everybody is paying the cost of that high and persistent inflation. But in this case, the poorest are those who pay the most for the high and persistent inflation. Here you have an economic problem, but you have also a social and political problem. But behind inflation, you have fuel for confrontation, for problems and instability in the near future. You can see the inflation from many perspectives. Another that can be useful to see is the inflation between national products and imported products. What we can see in the last 4 years is that systematically the inflation of national products is much higher than inflation of the import products. Behind this is what we call the overvaluation of the national currency. Basically, in the last 4 years, import goods have become relatively cheaper than those produced internationally, which reflect the gap between the international and national rates of inflation and the maintenance of the official exchange rate at 2.15. Behind this differential between national and imported goods inflation, you have the phenomenon of overvaluation. That means that sooner or later, the only way to correct that imbalance is adjusting the exchange rate, the 2.15. The third red light on the dashboard that I think is good to analyze is the fiscal one, the central government fiscal balance for 2008. Basically, during the first 7 or 8 months of the year 2008, the government still had very good oil prices. But despite of that, during the year 2008, the government accumulated a huge ordinary fiscal deficit. Indeed, what you can see here is that during the year 2008, the fiscal deficit was 20.7 billion bolivares. That's a huge amount of money that given that the spending was more higher than the level of income. And obviously, if that happened during 2008, what can happen during 2009, where the oil prices are much lower than last year? Without any doubt, the government is having problems to maintain the level of expenditure, basically because the government, in the last 3 or 4 years, had a very expansionary fiscal policy. What's the main problem? Oil prices at $40 is still a good price. But the problem is during 2005, 6, and 7, the government has a very expansionary fiscal policy. Just to give you an idea, in 2006, in real terms, the budget of 2006 is the biggest budget in Venezuelan history. And what happened with that level of spending, it's impossible to finance that with an oil price at 40. You need an oil price at 100 or 120, and that's the problem. You had in the past a very expansionary fiscal policy, and basically the high growth of the past, the last 4 or 5 years, is consequence of the higher production but consumption financed by a higher fiscal and quasi-fiscal policy expansion and lending and high level of money supply. One way to finance that very expansionary fiscal policy was development funds, quasi-fiscal policy. As you know, the government, the Venezuelan government, have many quasi-fiscal funds. These funds doesn't go to the National Assembly for approval. These funds, they don't go to the Contraloría for any control. Basically, are discretionary funds. Just to give you an idea, Fondeng, the most important quasi-fiscal fund that the government has, during 2005, 6, and 7, accumulate $28 billion. Just to give you an idea, Nicaragua, a small country in Latin America, the total GDP of Nicaragua is $7 billion. That means that the president, the Venezuelan government, has in their pocket 4 times the GDP of Nicaragua, 4 years of GDP. You know, the president can say to the Nicaraguan people, stay at home because I have enough money in my pocket to pay 4 years of production, goods, and services. And that's the source of real power international, and the source of power in international politics in Venezuela. It's a lot of money that is coming from oil, and the government has total control over those resources. An important part of the public expenditure has filtered out of the economy as an import. Look at the, according with official data, the imports for 2008 were $47 billion. They are the highest level of imports in history. And that level of imports are 5 times higher than they were in 2003. By the way, 40% of these imports are coming from U.S. You know, the Venezuelan government has a very strong confrontation with the American government, but business as usual. At the moment, the level of imports from U.S. are the best in the last 20 or 30 years. Very good business. That you can see a huge gap between economic policy decisions and the final results. But more than that, the most important for me is that this level of imports are not sustainable. This level of imports are sustainable with oil prices of 100 or 120. But at the oil prices of $40, $45, it's impossible to sustain the external sector and maintain the level of imports. In consequence, the government, the only option that has is reduce the level of the daily average foreign currency approved by CADIVI, dólares preferenciales. As Miguel said, for example, in July, the CADIVI supplied $207 per day, million dollars, and in March, according with my data, 104, that means that reduce at least in 40 or 50% the total allocation of preferential dollars. And obviously, with that, the economy is paying a very high cost of inflation. You have, what is the most important trade-off that the economy has at the moment, the Venezuelan economy? A trade-off between inflation and the level of international reserves. They have imbalances in the balance of payment. They have to reduce the level of dollar CADIVI they supply to the market. If they do that, the Venezuelan economy pay the cost of inflation. And that's the trade-off. If they don't want to pay the cost of inflation, they have to give more dollars CADIVI to the market, but that could imply imbalances for the external sector in the medium term. And that's the terrible trade-off at the moment. The balance of payments, I'm going to be quickly here because of Miguel already mentioned it. Basically, that's the balance of payment for the fourth quarter of 2008. We had a good level of export, but however, our imports were higher than our exports. That's the first time in 10 years that this happened was in the fourth quarter of 2008. That's the first time that imports are higher than export. Additionally, we had a huge deficit in the capital account, and we closed the balance with an important deficit. The same for the first for the first quarter of 2008. The balance, the total balance of the first quarter of 2008 was $50 billion of deficit. We had again. 2009. Sorry? 2009, yeah, that's the last. 2009, yeah. Thank you. Yes, it's the last. That's the fourth quarter, 2008, and this one is the last figure you can find in the Venezuelan Central Bank, first quarter 2009. It's getting and getting worse, because here the deficit is even higher than was the last quarter, and basically the same problem. You have a good level of export, $9 billion, but the imports are much higher than the exports. Here you have evidence that the external sector of the economy is not sustainable with prices of $40. It's a matter of time, unfortunately. And of course, see, you have systematic restrictions to dólares Cadivi, obviously that's fuel, gasolina pura, fuel for the exchange rate, for the parallel exchange rate. And the exchange rate has been growing, and now is almost 246% higher than the official rate. You have the official rate is 2.15, and the parallel rate is around 7 bolivars per dollar. And if that continues, the exchange rate, the parallel exchange rate is going to continue up, and obviously the economy will pay the cost in inflation. For the reason that we believe that, unfortunately, Venezuela is going to have this year again the highest inflation in the continent, and again between the three or four highest inflation in the world. Consequence of this disequilibrium, particularly in this market. What's the main problem? The problem is this, the same problem of the last 30 years. I think the Venezuelans, we need to write a good book about economic history, and that book should be compulsory for all Venezuelans, because we don't know too much about history. That's the same soap opera of the last 30 years. The prices of oil prices, for example, in July 2008 were $129. And now the average between January and April was only $41. That's obvious that the economic policy, the fiscal policy, and the external sector of the Venezuelan economy were sustainable with this oil price. But with this oil price, it's not sustainable. But that's the story of the last 30 years. Every time that oil prices go up, we believe that that's forever. But sooner or later, prices go down. And then you have fiscal problems, balance of payment problems, and you have to make adjustment. Something that I believe could be interesting to see, perceiving these economic indicators, about the opportunity that Venezuela is losing once again. In the context of very high oil prices in the last 10 years, around $40, that's the average of the last 10 years, Venezuela had a total oil income of $452 billion in 10 years. The question is, I think that probably the government could be done something better what he did with that income. And I think you have to compare both, what the government, the possibilities the government had, actually what are the results of in terms of economic policy. Only in 2008, with an average price of $86, the government had $92 billion in oil income. You know, with that income, I believe that Venezuela could have the possibility to initiate a development project with stability and sustainability for everybody. And we couldn't do it. It's, again, repeat the same story of the last 30 years. Finally, to summarize, what are the warning lights of the dashboard? Well, high and persistent inflation. Venezuela is having the highest inflation in Latin America and one of the highest in the world. Imbalances in the external sector characterized by appreciation of the exchange rate, a huge deficit in the current account, a huge deficit in the capital account, and insustainability of the external sector. Vulnerability in the oil sector, the heart of the Venezuelan economy. Venezuela is producing less and less oil. And finally, imbalances in the fiscal area. The fiscal policy, expansionary fiscal policy, is not sustainable with price at $40 per barrel. And finally, I believe we agree with that. The key point is sustainability. The expansionary trend in the Venezuelan economy in the last 3 or 4 years is not sustainable. It's not possible to sustain a growth model stimulated by increased consumption, which is not supported by higher production and private investment. And at the moment, we don't have any private investment, national or international. Everything was linked to oil. If oil prices are low, $40, $45, the country simply will be unable to continue importing to meet rising demand, maintain the exchange rate, the expansionary fiscal policy, and in general, it's impossible to maintain the illusion of harmony of the last 4 years, thanks to the very high oil prices during the last years. Thank you very much. And I believe we can have more details in the question time.
Thank you very much. Well, there's lots to be discussed, I'm sure. Please, if you could state your name and your affiliation as you ask your question. We'll begin with the lady here in the first row. I'm sorry, we have a microphone for you.
Hilda Ochoa, president and CEO of the Strategic Investment Group, an investment management firm, born and raised in Venezuela, but living in Washington for the last 30-some years. A couple of points to make. The conundrum as to why oil exporters don't experience inflation when internal production is rising at a level that's much lower than consumption is a very clear one to explain, and one that has been explained by Venezuelan economists, by the way, Sanchez Covisa, many years ago, which is the fact that you can import your way out of inflation, the same way that if you have a surplus oil income, you essentially import world inflation. You don't have to contend with your own internal inflationary pressures. The reason why it's been rising in Venezuela, despite the, is because the market is not completely open to imports, because there have been all kinds of constraints in the way the government has been managing the economy. That's just a comment. My question is, I think we would all agree that the country is facing some kind of a significant economic crisis over the next 12 months, and that has political implications. From what we know of the government and the types of relationships they have developed with other governments, what is clear to me is that there is no doubt that the Venezuelan government has a keen interest in creating a disruption in oil supplies so that oil prices will go up. And that the clear partner in that kind of maneuver would be Iran. And all the signs are there that they do have a partnership to try and disrupt the oil markets with some kind of a conflagration of some kind, probably in the Middle East, because that's the easiest place in which they can put it in place. That's a political question. That's an economic. That's not an economic question. But I would like to hear what are the signs, what are your perception, that given that it is in the interest of Iran and Venezuela, possibly Russia, although most likely not as much, because Russia has a completely different situation, to test the U.S. administration with some kind of a crisis of a political nature in the Middle East, what is the likelihood? Because I would give it at least a 50 to an 80% chance over the next 12 months.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. I'm not sure if it's one that people on this panel want to take. Anybody want to try it? No?
Just I want to say on the first comment that the inflation doesn't match with the liquidity GDP gap because of imports. Yeah, I agree with the view that imports, of course, help to bring down inflation. But when you take domestic inflation, which is calculated by the central bank at the wholesale level, at the production level, still the gap is there and it's very high. You show the figure, actually. Of course, average inflation is lower because of imports. But domestic inflation measured at the Venezuelan plants is still very, very much below the difference between M2 and GDP. So that's not enough an explanation, and I don't have an explanation yet, but that is not enough to explain the gap.
Thank you very much, gentlemen here.
Norman Bailey, Institute of World Politics. Question for Mr. Santos. Unless I misunderstood you, you said that Venezuelan exports are now running at about 2.2 million barrels a day, and then you multiplied that by $45 a barrel and came up with your conclusions. That 2.2 million barrels a day, does that include prepaid oil such as China and Japan? Does that include oil that's given away such as Cuba? Does that include oil that is sold at preferential prices such as to the Caribbean countries and Central America that participate in Petrocaribe, et cetera, et cetera? And if it does include those, shouldn't the actual price received for the 2.2 million barrels a day be substantially below $45 a barrel?
Yes, a concrete answer, no. I'm assuming that we get, as a counterpart of oil, the price, the average price of the Venezuelan barrel. And you have reason on that. But the truth is that it's more complicated than that, because when Venezuela gives oil away to some countries, those countries give to Venezuela back certain things, you know, hats from Bolivia and whatever. And those are accounted at the import level at a price. So when you look at imports at $48 billion, some of those imports are things received in exchange with all those countries. So we didn't expend the $48 billion either. So you are absolutely right in the sense that I'm assuming that we get the money from the 45, basically because I have no real ground to make the exact adjustment on the accounts that you are asking for. But it's easier than just listening to Alo Presidente and accounting from all the oil we're giving away. It's harder because at the import level, there are also some adjustments as a consequence of those exchanges.
Thank you. And if just I may add something. Also, when you look at the proportions of, you know, what is it actually sold vis-a-vis, in the case of Petrocaribe, for example, these are really small amounts. And actually, if you look at given the prices that you have now, it also the amounts that of financing, even in the case of Petrocaribe, moved with the price of oil. So I think that also adjusts.
Hi, Arturo Brillenburg, Farmington Asset Management. I have a question for actually both Jose Manuel and Miguel Angel. My question is, how much adjustments has already taken place? Is the devaluation, have you guys done, for example, a graph of what has been the effective exchange rate over time comparing how much money goes to Caribe and how much goes to the official exchange rate? And what is the if you would take the $100 million a day, what does that make currently at, you know, at, let's say, 6.5 the parallel exchange rate? What does that make the effective exchange rate today? So somewhere around 4.5? How much goes through Caribe? Can you just answer me that right now? A day. No, how much goes through the parallel market?
2008, 67% of imports went through Caribe.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I have that's one question, to see how much actually the adjustments already taking place in the way that they're spending money internally, the way or really are we going to see a package ever officially announced the way that that you talked about it before? Number one. Number two is, are the GDPs, balance of payment statistics, are they reliable in any way that you think that's what they are, or is there ways of checking that through third parties? I mean, I know you can check imports and I know you can check exports, but the other stuff, I don't know that you can check that easily. And then the last comment to Jose Manuel, I wrote a thesis in 1968 that says that the oil economies had a habit of spending when the oil price went down and devaluing afterwards. So it's a long, a very long, long story.
Okay, I believe that the government think that the global crisis is transitory. You know, in a few months, the oil prices are going to go up, and with that, they don't have to take any additional decisions or adjustment. And for the moment, they took just adjustment in two sectors, fundamentally. In this fiscal area, they increased the VAT from 9 to 12%. They reduced the level of public expenditure in 6.7%. And fundamentally, they increased the level of internal debt. Just to give you an idea, the government is going to sell bonds for $17 billion this year. The total stock of internal debt in Venezuela is around $17 billion. The government in just 1 year is going to double the level of internal debt. That's the adjustment in the fiscal area. The adjustment in the balance payments in the external sector is the government don't want to adjust the exchange rate. The only option they have is to reduce the level of dólares Cadivi they are supplying to the market. And the exchange adjustment is in that way. And the third option of economic policy is they are crossing their fingers to the oil price go up. If the oil price go up to 60, 65, 70%, the party continues and they don't have to make any other adjustment. That's the package of economic policy. Fiscal, external sector, and cross your finger. If the, I'm following, if the oil price doesn't go up in the next month, in the third or the fourth quarter of this year, or maybe the first quarter of 2010, we are going to see new adjustment in the Venezuelan economy, unfortunately.
Yeah, the point I want to make is there are two things. One is I agree with what you're saying about issuing. I think the actual value of domestic debt is higher than 17, but it's more closer to 30. But the point is, you know, we need to think of options, right? This is a country that is working with a budget. And so if you are going to have 50% less revenues, what is the expectation that they don't issue any debt and they do what with the other half of the expenditures? You reduce spending in 60% in a year, and instead of having a 1% contraction, you have a 12% contraction. I mean, any government around the world today is doing exactly that. They're going to their local markets, they're issuing debt in the local markets, and they're applauded by everybody because they can do it. So let's call it, you know, they have the opportunity to do it, and they're doing it. And I think, of course, there could be many other things that could be done. That's not under discussion. I think there could be other ways of doing it. There could be better ways of doing it. But I think financing their own budget, I think, is the least of the problems we have today. Answering, I think, your question about the reliability of data, you know, I've been going to Venezuela for a few years, and what I can tell you is in the last couple of years, our experience has been very surprising. You know, we had a few years that were as expected with not a lot of transparency, little to none. But in the last couple of years, there has been a lot of work on that, especially data coming from the central bank. I know there has been a lot of effort within the Ministry of Finance also to improve not only the data but also the quality of the people working with the data. You know, if you want, later we can talk a little bit more. I can tell you more about that. But I do, you know, I spend a lot of time when I go to the country with them, working with them. And you know, we use their data. We cross-check it with other sources. And I tell you, it's certainly much transparent than you get from Argentina, for example, which is not setting the bar too high. But
No, I just have the same comment on the people doing those figures at the central bank is the same people that used to do those figures on the Caldera administration, for instance. They're very good guys, I mean, very professional. And on the central bank figures, I do trust. Other figures, like Instituto Nacional de Estadística, you really have to read the small letters, because they didn't put up a new system of statistics. They just twist in the way they interpret some of the statistics. So if you buy the Encuesta de Hogares and you read the small capital, then you can make adjustments to find out. So that's different. But central bank data, I mean, we do trust it. And if we don't, there's no alternative. So there's no alternative in the country to official statistics. On your first question, we'll never see a package announced. Never. So it will keep on happening the same things. Chavez is going to announce a package. The whole nation sits down in front of the TV on a national broadcast, and then that ends up, and everybody says, like, there's no package, no measures announced, nothing happened. And the real measures are taking place behind. Not behind in the sense that they are hidden, but the government selling dollars in the parallel market at 7, it's already a devaluation a lot of people was expecting in February. So before last year, Cadivi did 70% of imports. I think the figure this year will be around 30. So the remaining will go through the parallel market, and that's a way already of financing the government. I think the measures that have taken place is the adjustment that we will see at this stage, like all the measures that I wrote down there and José Manuel just mentioned. That doesn't mean no more measures are coming, but you already had a depreciation of 100% in the parallel market. That's huge. So you already had that figure there. So you already had the VAT increase 3 points. You already had the government announcing, which is a surprise, that minimum wage will increase only 13%. They could have increased 40% and print money for that. They didn't do that. They just told their workers, we're going to increase 10% in May, 10% in September, and let's see what happens. And in the face of an inflation of 30%, that's huge. That's a huge adjustment in real salary. So I think those, but what we haven't seen are the effects of these in the economy. For instance, consumption haven't fallen yet. Imports haven't fallen yet. So inflation has not reacted to the policies yet. So, I mean, I think that the consequence of the measures are taken already and are there in place, and I think that might be enough for the year if oil prices keep on the same trend that my friends were mentioning. But the consequence of those measures have not appeared yet in the figures.
Question here.
Maruja Tarre, Simón Bolívar University. I have a question for Miguel Ángel Santos about Venezuelan funds abroad. Where are they? Are they in Swiss banks, in Nicaragua, in Argentinian bonds, or in Chavez's private checking account? And I have a short answer for Hilda about Iran. That's exactly one subject we are trying to study at Venezuelan universities. It's very difficult because all the agreements are secret, but you have to take into account not only Iran, but also the presence of Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Baath Party in Venezuela.
I have no idea where the funds are because they have not reported publicly. You want to know where the international reserves are? You go to the central bank webpage and there is
the allocation of funds to various security instruments, etc. But that doesn't exist in the Fonden case. It's just a report issued every 3 or 4 months with a total figure. But, at least as far as I'm concerned, I don't have any idea where the money is invested, type of instruments, banks, et cetera. I don't know if...
No, I agree with that. But I think, you know, if you look at... Well, they're not longer there. But if you look at the numbers, especially for debt, total debt in Venezuela is about, including domestic and external, is about $50 billion. I think they're... You know, the ranges go from the assets were at about from 80 to 50 in total assets and external assets, including international reserves. You know, that situation alone would have granted Venezuela a much higher rating than the one it has. One of the explanations why it doesn't is because we have the same doubts you just expressed.
Yunel Campos from Embassy of Venezuela. I think that in your explanation, Mr. Santos forgot that to mention that how many people in Venezuela are helping by the projects making for the government. I think more than 80% of the population in Venezuela receive the benefits of the revenues from the oil. And in this situation of the global economy, it's important to mention that the unemployment rate in Venezuela is going down from 7.5% last year and now is 7.1%. But it's a good thing that you should mention in your explanation.
And for Mr. Arevalo, when you talk about privatization and the role of the government around the financial system, you should see the world. But all economies are taking a step to regulate the financial market. And we are not nationalizing the Bank of Venezuela. We are trying to buy, and we are now discussing the UC price.
Thank you for your question.
May I add on to the gentleman's point? I was taken by the figure that you raised about the reduction in poverty, which appears to be directly related to state spending from 2004 on. And I'm wondering what you see as the outlook for social spending in terms of budgeting for 2009. Because of the importance of social of government spending in the social area. Just piggybacking on your question.
Yeah, no, on the question of how many people in Venezuela, if anything, benefited by the Misiones, which is a lot of people, I would love to have a concrete report of the Misiones on the web that I could check so that I can tell you the number. Like 3 million are in the Mision Rivas, 800 people are on the Robinson, Simoncito, Negra Hipólita, etc. I know it's a lot of people, of course. And that's, and without any doubt, has helped to reduce the poverty that I did show on that slide. But I don't have the concrete figures, because on the Misiones, the World Bank went down to Venezuela, and they say this is unauditable. It's impossible. There's no way to audit a Mision. I mean, how many people has been benefited, how much money did go in there, et cetera. So that's a pity, because there's no way, if something happened with Chavez or democratically goes, for other people to keep on with the Misiones, which are very good programs, because we don't have any records on them. So that on the Misiones side, and I grant you that it's a lot of people. I just don't have the figure because there's no figure. On the unemployment rate, you are right that Venezuelan unemployment rate has been very low. And one of the things that had happened, the Venezuelan rate, I didn't touch that point because it was given 15 minutes only. But let me tell you, there are three sources for the employment coming down. The first one, and the most important one, is that the people participating in the Misiones and getting money for that was not showing up to last year willingness to work. So that's very important. If you have unemployment at 20%, that means 2 out of 10 people were unemployed. Then I tell you, you know what? I talked to one of those guys, he doesn't want to work because he's studying. Then unemployment goes to 1 over 9, which is a lot lower than 2 over 10. So unemployment is decreasing a lot, explained by the fact that the government, through the Misiones, is giving money to the people to study or for different exchanges, and that people is reducing the willingness to work. And as a consequence, there are less people unemployed, not because they are occupied, but because they are inactive. So that's the main source. What happens, the problem with this is, and this is a good thing, but the problem with this is, what will happen when you don't have money? They'll get back to the labor market. They'll go back. When you don't have the money to pay them the same amount of pensiones, which in the world crisis you were mentioning, it's happening, they will appear again at the world market. Here I have a small difference with Instituto Nacional de Estadísticas, which I have discussed already with Elías El Yuri, is that when they interview the people that are in a Mision, and they say, I'm in a Mision, the INE goes away and say, you are inactive. And what I'm telling the INE is that they should allow the people to say, I'm in a Mision, but I'm looking for a job. Just, I can't find it, but I'm in a Mision in the meantime, because that guy is looking for a job, he's unemployed, while another guy that may say, you know what, I'm receiving money from the government to study, and I don't want to do anything else, that guy is truly an inactive. But the way the INE is carrying the interviews does not allow to account for the people receiving the Misiones that are actively looking for a job. When you are in a Mision, you are automatically considered inactive. And that's the first thing. The second reason for unemployment coming down is that the payroll of the government has increased by 50% from 2 million public employees to 3 million. And that a state growing, like the Venezuelan economy has grown, needs to increase their payroll. But again, if you don't have the money, I mean, to keep on this growing, I mean, the state cannot allow itself to be, again, the big employer of the Venezuelan economy because of the situation. So what will happen, that we move on to the third source, it's this private employment. And private employment, it's growing very small, because in Venezuela, if you hire somebody, you cannot fire him. So if you cannot fire him, you don't hire him. So because of that, because our labor law is one of the more restrictive labor laws in Latin America, private employment, when you look at GDP, it goes like this. When you look at private employment, it goes like this. So you kind of, when the economy goes down, you cannot fire people. And when it goes up, you don't hire people because you will not be allowed to fire them when it goes down. So that's the situation of the employment. With all these three factors accounted for, the Venezuelan unemployment rate is very low. It's one of the lowest, and it hasn't taken the hit that other employment rates have had in the rest of the world. But in the event of the government having a lot less money than what it used to have, we have to look at these three sources of reduction in unemployment.
Just to answer the question, I think the point you make about the banks, yes, there are many countries that are taking steps, but they're taking steps in institutions that are needing to be taking steps. Banco de Venezuela, if you look at the numbers, was doing just fine, so it didn't need to be intervened. And you're right, it's not being intervened, there are negotiations, as you mentioned, going on, trying to figure out what will be the right price for them to say, okay, well, we'll go. But it's not the same as you are seeing around the world, in which there are banks that are being insolvent and they're threatening the financial system of the country, and that's why the governments are intervening. This is not the same case. Probably the only case that you could say that's the case is Banco Industrial was recently done, but unfortunately that's mostly owned by the government. So I guess it's only fair the government takes responsibility for it.
Question
here.
Hi, I'm Irene Yakovlev. I'm an economist at the IMF, one of four Venezuelan economists at the fund, so there's not a lot of us. But my question was actually about the fiscal financing gap. And you guys obviously have better data on the BOP side. But if you assume that about 50% of government revenues are coming from the oil sector, and oil prices in the Venezuelan basket have fallen by 60 or 50 or 40%. There's going to have to be some adjustment on the expenditure side in the budget in 2010 at the very least, or fewer supplementary budgets. And I wonder how that impacts given the structure of expenditure, because if a heavy part of your expenditure is really on subsidies and transfers, on the misiones, and on civil service wages, there's not a lot of discretionary spending items to cut. So what's the source of the fiscal adjustment? Where is it going to come from? That was my question.
Yeah, I'll just take one step. You're right, and that's honestly it's the hardest part of what we do, try to figure out what is it that's going to happen. For example, when I was thinking about this in December, before we put in the negative outlook, we were thinking, okay, oil is going to be around 40-something this year, and that's going to have X impact on revenues. You assume that expenditures are going to behave in a fairly stable manner, and if you don't do any adjustment, you're looking at a deficit of between 12 to 14%, which is a lot, right? In my calculations, I have a deficit of about 5.5%, and I think what you do there is you look a little bit in the past and you see there will be some adjustment. There is already an adjustment. And a 5.5% to 6% is a deficit that we believe it could be financed this year. Now, as prices of oil move, that gap closes. And the need for the fiscal adjustments also is being reduced. I agree with him. This policy is strong.
Yeah, I agree with you. The average oil price last year was $86. The average oil price for Venezuela for the first 4 months is only $41, $42. You have a gap of $45. That means that Venezuela is going to receive $40 billion less this year for oil income. That is a very important restriction to for your fiscal policy. You have to do something. I don't know what they're going to do, but I suppose they are going to take some measures preserving the, maximizing the political impact of the measure, and I believe they are going to make some cuts in capital spending and in investment spending, trying to preserve current spending and particularly salaries. They have at the moment, you know, in 1999, the total public employees were 1.3 million. Now the Venezuelan government have 2.3 million. In 10 years, they increased the total amount of public employees for 1 million. In 1999, they had 13 ministers. Now they have 23, 24. They have a huge current spending account, and I think they want to preserve that. I just wanted to mention something very briefly, connected with this, with Roberto. What is doing Venezuela and, for example, what is doing Chile? Maybe it's not a good example, but I think both countries are doing totally different things. Chile, in 2007, had a fantastic surplus, fiscal surplus, around 7% surplus in 2007, and Chile has a macroeconomic stabilization fund that really works. Chile is doing anti-cyclical policy, and Venezuela is doing pro-cyclical policy, because Venezuela is reducing increasing taxes, reducing spending, and it's exactly totally different, the set of fiscal policy that both countries are doing. I believe that Venezuela goes in the wrong direction because it's doing pro-cyclical fiscal policy in the middle of a global crisis. And I believe that Chile is doing the right thing.
Thank you. I think we have time for just one last question, the gentleman here.
Good morning. My name is Carlos Figueredo from the Venezuelan Embassy. I am a PDVSA employee, 20 years of experience. So I know very well these topics that you are talking about. First of all, we don't deny that we are, you know, confronting very interesting challenges. But Venezuelan case is not the only case worldwide. So it's important just to frame when you analyze any case in the context that what is going on worldwide. The other thing that I take the opportunity to share with you that I was missing in your presentations was what the government has been done in infrastructure, health, and improving the quality of life of the people. If you don't have that information, we have plenty of examples how the country has been transformed. And that's something that always is in the backbone and the background. My third point is to give a complete picture about the Venezuelan oil industry. We have to track what is going on. And recently, at the beginning of this month, an independent company, a third-party company, run a balance of exports and imports of hydrocarbon in Venezuela. And they conclude that we are producing what we said that we are producing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any response? No?
Without comments.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen, for having come, and let's thank our panelists.